You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Well, Rose Manley and Orla Shinawee, have we managed to press our recorders on? Because this has been a challenge.
Just to say, I'm not responsible for the recorder here in London, so that'll be your fault, if anything, Richard.
Wow, a really inauspicious start to November's cycling podcast Femina. My name is Richard Moore. I'm with Rose Manley.
Hello.
And Orla Shinawee.
Hello.
In the Amsterdam studio.
Yes, Amsterdam calling with the points of the jury. How are we all? Keeping well?
Good.
Enjoying November?
Yeah, it looks very Amsterdamish scene behind you there, Orla. Exposed wooden beams. I don't know. It looks like a very kind of Amsterdam apartment.
Do you know what that is? Do you know what that is, Richard? I live in an Amsterdam apartment.
It's totally authentic.
I just go down to ye olde Amsterdam Museum every time we record this and pretend that it's where I live. But yeah, it's very typical, isn't it? Look, with slanty floors, as you well know, as you both know, you've been for a visit.
We have.
I'm looking out on some pumpkins here, Richard.
Lots of
jack-o'-lanterns.
Lots of pumpkins. Yeah.
Did you realise that time?
Well, no,
has
they're
passed.
Not discarded. They just haven't been prepared yet for soup or roasting.
Oh,
still good. Anyway, it's been a while since we all got together.
La Course was the last time we all got together, wasn't it?
That's correct. Yes, because the one after that was from the recorded in the Vuelta in Madrid, and then I joined up with Rose for the World Championships in Harrogate.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's been a while. And lots has happened, but it is the off season, of course. And what have we got coming up in this month's episode, Orla?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me. Both of your expectant, eager eyes glaring at me down the screen. What have we got? We've got my news roundup, which is fairly comprehensive, and that's all you need to know, so you can switch off after that. But lots of banter to come following the news roundup. We'll be chatting about...
I think I might turn off of this show already as myself.
That's desperate.
We will be chatting about the Olympic quota decision, which has caused a bit of a fuss. I'll be looking back on Bols Dolmans. We'll be looking at what has made them such a successful team as they hope to move into a new era with a new title sponsor, as yet to be found, however. And what else were we going to chat about?
We've got Cecily Trib-Ludwig, who you spoke to at the Ruler Classic. A very entertaining event. I think that's on YouTube, actually, your interview with her. So you can go and watch that. That was one of the highlights, I think, of the Ruler Classic. It was a really great few days, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. We were spoilt for interviews and guests there this year. And Cecily was just brilliant. And what I'm amazed by, really, is that every time people see her for the first time, they fall in love with her. You know, she has this presence, this aura, and this energy that is so infectious that she's just brilliant for the sport, you know. And we watched a little clip at the very beginning, which was from the Tour of Flanders, when she gave that interview, "Put the hammer down." And every time I watch that, I can't help but smile and get a little bit teary, actually. I get quite emotional because I just think it's a beautiful celebration of sport. And she's fantastic for that. So, yeah, catching up with her.
We'll hear from her later on. She's moving teams, of course. But first of all, news roundup, please, Orla.
Okay, and stand by for Corrections Corner, because it does feel like it's been quite a while, so probably missed a load of things. So keep your ears peeled, guys. I'm right in saying, aren't I, we've only had one women's World Tour race since our last podcast from the Worlds, isn't that right? The Tour of Guangxi, won by Chloe Hosking, racing for Ali Cipollini for the last time before moving to Rally UHC next year. Marianne Vos finished in third, which was enough for her to win the Women's World Tour classification. She overtook her fellow Dutchwoman Annemiek van Vleuten in the last race of the year, with the Dutch 1-2-3, Lorena Wiebes, finished in third. Incidentally, Wiebes, still only 20 of course, finished top of the UCI's individual rider ranking, which is based on all races. She is now rumoured to be looking at a team change in a way out of her contract with Park Hotel Valkenburg, who've done a fantastic job of punching above their weight of late. She's supposed to be in the final year of a 3-year contract next year, but after 15 wins this season, including 8 from the Women's World Tour and the Dutch national title, she's understood to be tempted at least by 3 top teams for next year: Trek, CCC and Sunweb. I will come to other transfer news in
just
a moment.
As far as Corrections Corner goes, do you want us to just chip in with corrections as we're
Please
going?
Please do, or? Mr. Patronising. Yeah, yeah. Save them all up for the end if you prefer.
I mean, I could be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure Lorena Wiebes is actually under contract at the end of 2021.
Yeah, well, she signed a... I've got written here. She signed a 3-year...
It's pincer movement, Corrections Corner here.
Contract. 2017 she signed,
a 3-year contract before the 2018 season. So that would be 2018, 2019 and 2020.
I mean,
so
I could be wrong.
That is correct.
So you are wrong. So a correction to Corrections Corner there. Lovely.
Brilliant
Let's get bogged down nice and early. Anyway, we have had news, as I referred to at the top of the episode, of the rider quotas for the Tokyo Olympics next year. The UCI have decided to stick with gender inequality because, you know, why fix what's not broken? I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyway... they're going along with gender inequality, age-old process when it comes to rider spots for the road race. 130 spots will be available for the men and just a fraction over half of that for the women, 67. So Cyclist Alliance is among those speaking out and asking for gender equality for future Olympics. We'll be chatting about that maybe in just a moment. OVO Energy have announced they will no longer be sponsoring the women's tour. They've pulled out of the Tour of Britain as well. The organisers Sweet Spot are looking for new title sponsors, but they insist that the women's tour and the Tour of Britain and the Tour Series will all continue next year with or without a title sponsor. One race we won't have next year is the Tour of California. Organisers there announced that both the men's and the women's races will not be run next year while they try to work out if they have a sustainable business model to take the races forward to 2021. So quite a bit of fallout and fuss from that. One race going the other way and expanding, at least with its coverage anyway, is the Tour Down Under. We'll get live streaming there. All 4 stages of the Tour Down Under will be live streamed in 2020 for the first time, with the final stage live on TV. 2 transfers then. Cecily Utrip-Ludwig, arguably the biggest move. She's going from Biglet to FDJ. Chloe Hosking, as I mentioned, to Rally UHC. Clara Koppenberg returns to Biglet in a leadership role, leaving WNT Rotor. Soraya Paladin is going to CCC. Alison Jackson to Sunweb. Abby Mae Parkinson moving to Lotto Soudal. She's focusing on the one-day classics there. Canyon Schramm have re-signed their Zwift Academy rider Ella Harris for next year. Anna Henderson, the British under 23 road race and time trial champion, is joining Sunweb for 2020. Trek Segafredo have signed Eleanor Backstead and Lucinda Brand, bringing the number of full-time riders on their roster from 12 to 14. Away from riders, Katusha are staying in cycling after the men's Katusha Alpecin team was taken over by Israel Cycling Academy. Katusha Sports clothing brand are staying in the sport and becoming the clothing supplier and title sponsor of Biglet. So the team have announced they will be known as Biglet Katusha next season. And then one last bit of news. The UCI has announced that it could introduce new guidelines for the eligibility of transgender female athletes competing in cycling events beginning in 2020. The guidelines could stipulate a maximum testosterone threshold, which is half of the current maximum, for transgender females to be eligible to compete in the women's category. The decision was reached following the recent international meeting on transgender eligibility in competitive sports, which was held in Lausanne in Switzerland and was hosted by the IAAF, or World Athletics, as they'll be known from now on. The issue has been an issue in World Athletics the last couple of years, certainly in terms of testosterone levels, and it is something that is becoming ever more of an issue in global sports, so something that the UCI are currently considering.
A community around the world,
stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our title sponsor at the Cycling Podcast Femina. Grateful to them as ever for their support. If you want to get your winter woolies, your winter gear, go to rafa.cc and also have a look at the Gone Racing films that they've been doing with Team EF Education First, also at rafa.cc and on the Rafa channel on YouTube. How many corrections corners can we have for Lorena Vibas? Because according to Pro Cycling Stats, she is under contract to the end of 2021. And it's usually uber reliable. So
we've got different sources, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. I understood she was trying to break a year early.
She's certainly...
if you're listening, give us a bell.
What we can agree on is that she's definitely trying to... move teams, and that's quite interesting.
Well, that's a rumor.
Well, that's certainly. That appears.
I think she, addressed it.
Yeah, I think she's. But we'll talk about some of the transfers a bit later on, because you know some of the teams will certainly Trek Segafredo have beefed up, haven't they, for next year? And there are a few other interesting moves around, and we'll hear from Cecilia Tripp Ludwig in the final part. But just to pick up on a couple of things there, before we hear our Bols Dolmans retrospective, calling it, looking back on arguably the best team there's ever been in women's cycling.
I think there's no argument, really, is there? Correct.
Okay, sorry about that. All
the
right.
best team there's ever been in women's cycling. But it's true. Yeah, you think but there's no point in qualifying.
But the story that's caught a lot of people's eye in the last few days has been about the Olympic quotas and the fact that there'll be far fewer women riding in Tokyo than men because of the way that the UCI are allocating places. I mean, it's a kind of familiar story, isn't it? And it's strange because certainly since 2008, it has seemed that the UCI and cycling have been really striving for gender equality in terms of the number of events and so on. But this is still quite a discrepancy.
And you've got to ask, where does that come from? How do they think that that's a good way to be? And I'm asking this as a very genuine question, because there must be thought that goes behind it. They don't just pluck these numbers out of the air. So they've thought that 130 for men is fair and 67 for women is fair or representative or some sort of a good method, because they must know that they're going to come in for criticism. They must know that. We're in 2019. You know, this is the 2020 Olympic Games. And it's not like it's an issue that's not been talked about. I'm genuinely baffled. And if anyone has any indication or any sound reasoning for why this could be the case, I would love to hear it. I mean, obviously there's more strength and depth in the men's peloton, but how do you create strength and depth if you don't put the opportunities there, you know? And an Olympic Games is a fantastic opportunity if you come from one of the smaller nations, for example, to showcase yourself or to get that Olympic experience at the top level, to maybe use it as a shop window for professional teams as well. And if you've got a talented youngster from a country where competition isn't so great, I mean, we're not talking about the Netherlands, for example, but maybe from another country, and you think, well, I've got a chance at competing at the Olympics if I'm a triathlete, but not if I'm a cyclist. Where are you going to go? You know, so you're losing potential talent from the sport from a young age, because they're going to look at that from a smaller country and think, well, there's no spot for me there. I genuinely don't understand it.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think it's also, obviously it's an Olympic issue, but it's also a UCI issue, because at the end of the day, you get Olympic qualification based on your UCI points. That's why, you know, people years ago trying to think, you know, can women cycling have a future without the UCI and do something radical and different from the UCI? They can't, because at the end of the day, those Olympic qualification points comes from the UCI. But it's an odd number, because it's, 67 women. It's an odd number, but it's also the same number as when they first had a road race in the Olympics, which I think is 1984, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous in itself that that could be the first Olympic women's road race. But there it was the same number, which was 67 women. But what? So then I went and looked back at the... because lots of people were saying, you know, the women's has grown so much more since then, so we should have so many more riders. I thought, well, I'm going to have a look at what the men's kind of baseline is. And the numbers are just all over the place. So we're saying 2020 there'll be 130 men starting. In the last Olympics, 2016, 2012, 2008 and 2004, there was 144 men, so more men. In 96, there was 184 men starting that race. And then but the numbers just kind of fluctuate, but they're always well, I mean, they're well above 67. They fluctuate from about 130, actually next year would be the lowest number of male participants in the road race, interestingly. So it makes you think, well, it's not judged on, lots of people saying about how, you know, if there's been growth in the sport, there should be a growth in the number of participants. But clearly the way they're coming up with these numbers is not based on how popular the sport is or how well it's doing or, you know, how commercially viable it is, because always the numbers wouldn't fluctuate so, you know, crazily over the years. So it's interesting that this, for next year, there will be 14 less male riders than there has been, but those 14 wouldn't be allocated to the women. Or, but then again, why would you allocate less for the men and more for women? Why wouldn't you just allocate more women, you know, full stop? I guess it's a case of logistics and athletes, but it's not really that, is it? I mean,
the IOC has been putting pressure on to bring athlete numbers down across all sports, but you know, that an 80 rider road race is still a decent field. It wouldn't look quite as spectacular perhaps, but two 80 rider races or two 90 rider races would have the same number of athletes, and it's odd that there isn't equality there. Very strange indeed, particularly, as I say, after 2008, when there was a huge fuss about on the track, especially there were fewer events for women than for men, and the UCI addressed that for the 2012 Olympics. But this is an area where they haven't addressed the gender inequality there.
And I think what annoys me about it is that they put these stats out there and then just walk away. So if there's a real reason and a genuine reason, then that could be absolutely fine. And we might all understand it. But they put these figures out there and say what the quota is. And without then supporting their reasons for there being gender inequality, it's just like, well, there you go. That's that. There you go. Make of that what you will. And I just think out of respect for the women's sport, they could just say the reason we have almost double the number of spots for men as for women is because X, Y, and Z. And then we've got something to get our teeth into. But because they're so silent on it, it's almost like they expect, as long as they don't make a fuss about it, no one else will. I just genuinely don't get it. But I'm not trying to be hostile for the sake of it. I'm not trying to be argumentative for the sake of it, because that's not useful. There may be valid reasons, but I'd just like to know what they were. And I'd just like it if they were proactively offered, rather than everybody scratching their heads and feeling a bit hard done by. They could sort of steer all that off at the pass by just saying these are the reasons that there is such a discrepancy between
you
the two.
You were involved in a sort of UCI working group, weren't you, Orla, that met after the Tour de France. Are any other meetings scheduled? I know that you spoke there about the UCI and their role in supporting and promoting and developing women's cycling.
Yeah, there was supposed to be another meeting around the launch of the Tour de France route, which didn't take place. I couldn't make it to that one anyway. And, you know, it's an honour to be invited onto these things. And I think it's always better to try to change things from the inside rather than the outside. And that's why I was really interested to go along. And the focus of the group was how to improve the attractability of road racing. Sadly, I don't think I'm misremembering this. I was the only person in a room of, I should count the numbers really, maybe about 30 odd, of sponsors, race organisers, team owners and riders to bring up women's racing. And when I did, there was a lot of shaking of head around the room.
Do you mean nodding of head rather than shaking?
Oh, sorry,
of head.
Nodding of head. Not tut tut. Sorry, I was nodding my head as I said shaking head. There was a lot of nodding of heads around the room. But immediately once I'd made my point, it was moved on to something else. So I made an isolated point about women's cycling that wasn't brought up. I spoke to people afterwards who said, you know, great point, well made, thank you. Unfortunately, with these things always, there isn't enough time for all the issues that need to be addressed. You know, it was about the globality of the sport, really, and all the different things that form issues within. But it just, yeah, it saddened me and didn't surprise me that no one else brought up women's cycling and that my point of women's cycling wasn't even addressed. But as I say, I'd much rather be on the inside. And there are other things that do need attention as well. But I'm looking forward to the next one, as long as I'm invited back
maybe,
again.
Yeah, maybe the meeting did happen, you just weren't invited.
Yeah, maybe I was excluded and they wanted to talk about race radios instead for the umpteenth time, but we shall see.
Just what, before we go on to Bulls Dolmans, one other thing from the news roundup, the Tour of California hiatus, and there were rumours that a new law in California might have been a factor in this. This law concerns equality again, and the women's race in California, they have equal pro rata prize money, but fewer days. This California law, the AB 467 law, that requires organisers,
snappy title,
to provide equal pay for men and women in order to secure permits to run events on state lands. And although the pay was pro rata equal, the number of days was fewer, so overall the prize money was less for women. The organisers have denied that is the reason for the hiatus, but it means there are no Women's World Tour events in America next year, which is quite a hole, isn't it, really?
God, it's a huge team. Can you imagine being a North American rider, a North American team, and not have on that whole continent not having a home race? I think it's a huge shame. It really is. And I know that, you know, the race maybe, I don't want to say struggled, but it had to, you know, compete with other races at the same time to be able to get the top riders. But it did, you know, and it had an excellent caliber of competitors and winners, you know, Anna van der Breggen being one notable amongst many. But it is a real shame. I mean, they say it is for now a hiatus and that it might come back in 2021, and they've got to look at the business model. And they, and as you say, Richard, they have denied that this new law is the reason. But the fact is there are 3 days of racing available for the women and 7 days of racing available for the men. So there is no way for the women, I guess, to have equal pay to the men because they just can't race the same number of days.
I've seen a lot of kind of things about the fallout of not having the Tour of California on the men's side. There's a whole, you know, Velo News podcast devoted to it, but it's all kind of talking about why it's a shame for the men. But for the women, it's a massive issue because Bira is also not running next year. So we've gone basically from a state where there were several World Tour, Women's World Tour stage races competing with each other in a very crowded month. There was like Chongming, and then there was Bira, and then there was Tour of California. It's going to be really busy, and you know, not all teams could do all of them. And we've gone from that to having neither of those, the two best, well, you know, apart from the women's tour, but the two best stage races on the Giro Rosa, I guess. But still, to have Luz Bira, because, and that was for reasons the organisers said something about they were exhausted from from organising it. And Luz California as well is a big issue. And it's, and it takes away a lot of opportunities for stage races. It takes away a huge amount of opportunities for kind of emerging talents, I think, because you see a lot more, people are allowed a lot more freedom in a stage race like Bira and a stage race like the Tour of California than they are in something like the Giro Rosa, where it's, you've got to have your absolute best riders and, you know, it's, you're right, everyone is riding all for them. There's loads more opportunities to be had at something like California and interesting racing, like, you know, they did Mount Baldy this year, and you know, that's a huge mountain, and it's great to see the women's peloton race on something like that. So I think it's a real shape, and I can't really see, I know they're saying it's a hiatus, but you know, the reasons that it's a hiatus and not the end is because they say they want to find it, make it a sustainable business. But I mean that for me, that's kind of one of the big problems with cycling, is it, There seems to be a lot of money swilling about, but, you know, teams fold and, you know, riders have no teams to go to, and races just collapse, you know, from one year to other. Because I remember, like, Philadelphia Classic, that was a great one-day race for women, and that said that was going on hiatus, and that never came back. And I think it's kind of happens a lot with the American races, that they don't last very long. And it was good to have the Tour of California for as long as we had it.
Colorado as well.
Yeah.
You know, it strikes me, though, just as you're chatting, Rosanna, I haven't thought about this, but if losing a few races actually turns out to be a casualty of the fight for equality, maybe so be it. Because it's not like we don't have new races coming on board. We've got the, you know, the 10-day Battle of North. That's okay in 2021, but that should be an epic new addition to the racing calendar,
the
especially
word
since it is a standalone.
Epic, I think, as you well know, Orla is
that's
banned.
Why, yeah. That's why I give it extra emphasis, because I'm a rule breaker, Richard. Deal with it. But, you know, and the fact that the Tour Down Under is as it should be anyway, because it's a women's world tour race, but, you know, that we're that we've got this guarantee of live streaming of all four stages. If at the end of all of this, in a couple of years' time, it turns out that we've got a better calendar, and the congestion of the calendar isn't that great, really, whenever it comes to teams that are the size of the women's teams, then maybe so be it. But that's only if everything else is filled out. But yeah, if it is one of the casualties, then maybe didn't have a place, really. Is that me being a little bit
unemotional? Well, I think it's kind of, but it's not, because it's not just women's races, is it, that collapse? Well, it's not just races that are men and women's races that collapses. So I don't think that kind of, that it's really about the, you know, the fact that they have to be equal, that it means it disappears. I think it's just the business of cycling is not sustainable for running a race unless you're, you know, ASO and you're suddenly having a tour in Saudi Arabia out of nowhere. Like, I think it's impossible.
Don't think there'll be a women's tour
in
there.
Saudi Arabia. Yeah, wow.
I'm not sure they've passed any laws.
Yeah. Of course. Front. Yeah. For equal pay. Yeah. Can you imagine? But yeah, I think it's
they're a little bit behind California. Yeah. I think when it comes to these kinds of issues.
But yeah.
But yeah, I guess what I mean is that I don't think it is all doom and gloom. You know, I think other races are improving and expanding, or in terms of their coverage expanding. And you know, I think the Battle of North, the fact that that is even a proposition, is wonderful. So I guess I just mean we don't have to be too negative about all of that. It's a shame to lose those races, and it's always a shame to lose races that are well run and good for the sport. But we do have progress, at least on the other side, and we've got things to look forward to.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their ongoing support of the cycling podcast Femina, and you can still get 25% off all your Science of Sport products at scienceofsport.com with the code
SASC.
I didn't mean to drop. Carry on.
Oh, SASCP25. CP25. The problem is that
I'm not sure you're in sync there.
The problem is that Orla is on a delay, and when I'm hearing Orla on a delay, it's really hard to sing.
I was trying to counter that by singing quicker than
for the avoidance of doubt.
SISCP25 is the answer. Orla are going to practice, and we'll get that better.
SISCP25 at scienceofsport.com for 25% off all your Science of Sport products. And we're very grateful to Science of Sport for their support. Moving on to Bulls Domans. I mean, a bit of a bombshell at the World Championships, really, when you sort of tipped us off about this, Orla, that they were going to be holding a press conference announcing that they were looking for new sponsors, with both Bulls and Domans pulling out at the end of the year. And, you know, they have really raised the bar in terms of women's cycling and women's teams. I was listening back, actually, Orla, to an interview you did a couple of years ago with Erwin Jansen of Dolman's Landscaping, one of the sponsors, obviously. And he was just talking about, you know, when they began sponsoring the team, you know, having a bus. Well, they were the first women's team to have a kind of customized bus. And they were, you know, obviously taking things from men's teams, but really professionalizing the sport. They've done a lot to do that. Others have copied and even overtaken them. They've still got Anna van der Breggen, they still win a lot of races, still got a very strong team. But I felt, I don't know if you felt the same in the last year or so, that old kind of magic hasn't quite been there, or certainly the domination hasn't quite been there.
It definitely hasn't, because of the caliber of the competition, you know, and the consistency of the competition. However, I do find it amusing that I was looking back through the year's news coverage, and in April this year, there was an article saying, I mean, essentially spelling out the decline of Bowles Dolmans, because they hadn't been the dominant team yet this year. And yet they are once again the top team in the world. You know, that's the fifth year in a row. So even when they are under pressure and even when they're facing stiff competition, they are still better than everybody else. And I think that is incredible, given how long they've been at the top, given the nature of the competition that's come on board now. I mean, not just that there are more riders here becoming more professional and teams that are more professional, but the fact that we have the women's teams joined to the men's teams and all the best practice that they're learning from the men's teams, which in many ways has been a different sport for a long time. They are raising that bar of professionalism ever further, which Bowles Dolmans themselves freely admit. And yet, Bowles Dolmans are still the top team by quite some margin. I think it's really impressive and just a testament to the years of hard work that they've put in. And a credit to the two sponsors, you know, because it's easy to lament the fact they are pulling out and say that it's a reflection or a bad reflection in some way of where we are financially and in a business sense in women's cycling at the moment. But the fact they've been in it for 10 years, I think it's 8 years collectively, is huge, you know. And I think they can all look back and be very proud. And if anyone has got a good sponsor product to be able to offer any potential sponsors, then it's Bowles Dolmans.
And what's the news on that? You spoke to Danny Stam. We're going to hear from him. He's the director of the team. Any news on the hunt for a new sponsor?
The news is that as yet there is no news to report, at least. Danny was understandably reluctant. Reading between the lines, it doesn't sound like they're very far along with any negotiations if they have much to discuss at this stage. They do have another year left, so they've got that time, but they will not want to be allowing that clock to tick down, because obviously once we start racing next season, riders can start to be courted by other teams. And once you lose a star name or two, say a former world champion, they still have three in their books, then things start to look a little bit trickier and then it's harder to find sponsors. He's still sounding a very positive note, you know, and I think they did a great job at that press conference in Yorkshire of selling all the positives, not just of the team, but of the sport as a whole and the growth of the sport. And if you were to look at that, you would think, wow, that's a really easy business investment, actually, because for a couple of million, you get huge exposure on an international scale. But at the moment, they have nothing to report and no sign yet that there's anything in the offing. But I've been told that hopefully he'll keep me up to date with anything as it happens.
But what I've seen of you know, written down from what Danny Stam has been saying, he's also looking, it's not that he's looking for any bit of money to carry this team on. I mean, he's looking for a budget so that it can be expanded, so that, you know, the squad can be, there can be more riders on the roster, that they can compete at the highest level, that they missed. Then they're not on the world tour teams that they're bringing in, the UCI are bringing in. Bowles Dolmans aren't on that because it would take a 4-year commitment, which obviously they can't do at the moment. But, you know, Danny Stam has said, and I don't know whether he said any more to you all about it, about that he wants to be on that very top level. And I think kind of when with Team Sky, when Sky said, oh, we're pulling out, everyone thought, well, there's no way that they're going to find a sponsor that is going to give them what Sky gave and anything more, or even match anywhere near to matching Sky. And kind of everyone's writing these things about the end of Sky and the end of their dominance. And then, you know, Ineos comes along. So I think it's way too early to suggest, but I think it's just quite remarkable. Not remarkable, but I'm impressed by the fact that Danny Stam is laying down his card and saying, look, if you want to come on board, you have to be committed. You have to be giving us a lot of money, and we want to make this thing a bigger project than it ever has been before.
Well, let's hear, shall we, from Danny Stam, the sports director. Also from Chrissy Majerus, longest serving team member at Bowles Dolmans. Also a couple of riders who rode for the team in its early days, Nikki Brammeyer and Lucy Martin. Let's hear from all of them now.
I think it was a wonderful time, and I think we were really pretty happy and proud that sponsors like Dolmans and Bowles give women's cycling the opportunity to get where they are now.
The man at the helm of the Bulls Donors team and who steered them to world domination having taken over in 2013 is former track cycling star Danny Stamm.
The difficult part from cycling is you fight for a victory, you have it, and then you're actually busy already with a new one. I think that is what we forget in sport always, is to enjoy how successful a team can be. But I think, yeah, the team time trial, that is always something special to win. And yeah, we win that in Qatar, and I think that is also one of our, because you do that with a complete team. I think they all see the passion from winning races and try to get it as good as possible. And of course, before you build a team, you look a little bit, suits the rider in your team or doesn't suit. See, I mean, we also had really great riders who want to join our team, and I was pretty sure it wasn't working. And yeah, then you make choices, and yeah, on the end that works all good out. Our team is a little bit, we are pretty close to each other, and it's a sort of a kind of family, and it needs to fit in the family. We cannot have some egoist riders what are star riders but don't fit in that group. And they must understand that we always want to get the best out of it for the team and not for the individual. And on the end, you get also really good results for the individual. And the top rider grows by this team always a little bit higher. And I think that's also, if you have so many good riders, if you want to be in, yeah, you also need to grow in that group. And when it's not working, yeah, then automatically you fall out.
Do you think that the Dutch culture, the Dutch heart of the team made a difference to who you selected and the kind of personalities you wanted in the team?
Yeah, definitely. Because I also know that there are riders who not can handle this direct forward way. And they were more struggling with that. Yeah, and then yeah, you don't fit in our line where we want to go. And I must also say there were also some girls that I didn't expect that they liked it. And then on the end they said, yeah, I like the direct way from speaking with us. So yeah, it's also up to the own personality. Yeah, how you fill that in.
Lucy Martin only did one season with Bulls Dolmans in 2013, the team's first year with that familiar name, but it's a year that she remembers vividly.
It was really good. It was very Dutch at the start, and they had a few teething problems with like new equipment, new riders, new mentality with Danny Stamm coming on board as well. And for me, it was really good to be a part of and to see. I was only with them for 1 year actually, but just to see the vision they had and how they really wanted to become the next best team. So yeah, it was quite nice for me to be just at the start of that process really.
Was it clear from then that their ambitions were to really become a dominant force in women's cycling?
Yeah, and that was kind of the reason I think, well, Lizzie and me, you know, like went across to that team, because that's what they were promising to be, a bigger team, a better team. And I think it was a year after I rode for them, they had specialised bikes on board, and you could just see, you know, that the momentum was building and they were trying to sign better riders. So I think the whole staff, the mentality, everything was just focusing on how they could make things better. And obviously that's what they went on to do in the years after that. One reason they were there, or they are, have been so successful, is actually the fact that they were a Dutch team and like a real Dutch base, and that mentality really came across. And you know, when the year before when I joined Drinks, it was my first experience in a Dutch team, and I did find it quite hard because they're quite blunt and they're quite, you know, they say things how they are. So it was the same in Bulls Dolmans, and it was very much, this is your job, this is what you're doing, and that's it. They don't try and say things in a nice way, which is hard sometimes, but I think also that makes a really a good team and a good mentality to have between all the staff, and bring that across to the riders. And especially in the team meetings, it was always very direct, which I actually liked, and I think it worked really well.
The longest serving member of the current Bulls Domus team, having joined in 2014, is 32-year-old Luxembourg champion Christine Madjeras.
We always had one or two like big riders. In the beginning we had Lizzie and Ellen, then we had AV, Megan. So we always had also in the beginning those big riders that were number one in the ranking or in the World Tour ranking. So obviously that helped to have a good feeling in the team itself and kept motivating everyone, not only the leaders. With the years going, some leaders left, and the management had always a good hand to bring in new leaders with Chantal and Anna, Amy. So it was a little bit like changing seats all the time, but the level at the top stayed the same, and like the majority of the team was the same. So there was not so much changing, and I think that helps. That helps also to know each other and to trust each other. And I think that's also because all those leaders were intelligent girls, and we, well, at least they always knew that we can only ride for one, and they were smart enough to know when they had to, be the leader and when they had to be the not leader. And so there was actually never really a fight about sharing leadership. That's always a good thing for the atmosphere inside of the team, because if you have already fights about who's the real leader, then the race is starting pretty bad.
9 days before she was due to give birth to her first child, Nikki Bramier spoke to us about her time with Bulls Domans. She was there in 2016 and 2017 when they were incredibly dominant.
I loved it, to be honest. Like, just all the girls, we just had a really good kind of bond. Like, it was a really great atmosphere, because I was always a bit cautious of going to a big women's team, especially like the best team in the world pretty much at the time. But I just seemed to fit in really well, and all the girls were welcoming, the staff were great. Danny Stan was like a really good manager, DS, and it was a perfect scenario, really. I think it was just the fact that we all kind of knew our job, and we were always like prepared to work for each other. We had a clear plan at the start of races, we were relaxed, we had really great equipment, and just the whole atmosphere was just really good, to be honest. It was just like we went into a race and we knew we could go and win it, and we'd go and do it. I just think they've like set the bar so high that every other team kind of had to kind of step up to their level. You know, they were so dominant for like a good maybe 3-4 years, and it was kind of everybody else's time to try and step up to match Bowls. And I think that's what's definitely kind of made the sport where it is at the moment, just because that bar was kind of that high and everybody else had to kind of work towards it, and it's just ended up pushing everybody further in the sport, I think.
From the outside, it looks like, and I've always thought that Bulls Domans have been the leaders and the instigators of change within women's cycling, and what you have all done to professionalise the sport by simply being professional has been incredibly impressive from the outside. Did you feel that from the inside? Was that part of your goal, really, to raise the bar for women's cycling? Or was that just a byproduct of being incredibly good at what you do?
Well, when I came into the women's cycling, then I also was simply honest that it was not my biggest goal to be in the women's cycling. I was thinking, I don't know what I can expect from that. And then I was there for the first year, and then I think, well, if you you can change a lot pretty quick in cycling world just through living like a professional. And I think our team was one of the first teams what tried to create it. How do you live like a professional cycler sport? And that makes the huge steps, I think. And then you can see that all the girls what are in the team making a step forward. It's easy when you can make huge steps, and it's difficult when you make small steps. And what you see coming up is that a lot of women teams are together with the men teams. They have, of course, a lot of knowledge from the men teams, what they take with them, and it's not easy to keep them a step ahead.
So without giving too much away to other nations who might be listening, if you were to give one lesson that other countries could learn from the Dutch to create more champions in the future. What do you think that might be?
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, you first need to get more riders on the bike. Mm. And that's the most important thing. I mean, and if you have them on the bike, you really need to give them the fun from the bike, and not try to let them be the world, directly the best rider of the world, but that they can enjoy cycling and that they see the fun of it and what the benefit they can have from that the rest of their life. Then you need to hope that that some talents stay on the bike and not leaving the bike before they are 50.
Listening to the Cycling Podcast Feminine, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Thank you very much indeed to Skoda, who have supported the Cycling Podcast Femina since the Women's Tour, as indeed they did last year as well. Very generous of them to back this podcast. We hope they'll be back next year as well, not least because we got to drive the lovely Octavia car, which has been picked up, you know.
What, on it has
Thursday.
Been pop-
I've yeah. still got it. It's been great.
Blimey.
When I flew over recently for Ruler Classic, actually, instead of ordering an Uber, Richard said that I could call on his services to chauffeur me from the station back to his home. And lo and behold, this wonderful Cycling Podcast branded Skoda turned up at the station. I thought, yeah, we're doing this subtly, eh?
Wow. Are you meant to be using it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's fine. It's fine.
Just thinking we've blown your
what
cover.
What am I meant to be? I blew my own cover.
I blew it on Insta stories already.
No.
As soon as he arrived, I was like, well,
maybe that's why I got the call shortly after that to say they were coming to collect it. That was
all
an
right.
error. I knew it was a mistake to let Orla anywhere near it with her phone to hand. Anyway, moving on to some of the transfers over this off-season for next year. One of the big ones, as you said, in your news roundup, Orla, is Cecily Utrip-Ludwig moving on from a team that she's been with a long time to FTJ, which I think caught a few people by surprise. It's quite a change for her. So I caught up with her at the Ruler Classic just after she'd been on stage with you, Orla, and asked her a little bit about the move. Cecily, you've been on stage with Orla there. Do you enjoy doing that sort of thing?
Yeah, I really did. It was good fun. And there were actually quite a lot of people coming. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was good fun, and Ola is always good. So.
Well, she mentioned that you've been on TV in Denmark and stuff. What sort of things? And have you found that your profile is rising there?
Yeah, I mean, I think also slowly people are in Denmark also opening their eyes towards, women's cycling, that's fun. And we maybe also have some good Danish riders, and then, you know, we're a small country, so people are also cheering extra for each other. So I think, yeah, that's when, yeah, then I was I think it was like a fun comedian TV show, which was also good fun.
No sort of equivalent of, I don't know, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, or anything like that.
No.
You're not going down that road.
No, I'm not.
Watch this space. You are switching teams, and I think that caught a lot of people by surprise, the team that you've gone to especially. How did that move come about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was time for me to get a new environment, to get new inspiration, and I'm really excited to go to FDJ, and I think it's a good place for me to develop even more as a rider, because I think I've still got quite a lot to learn, and they're quite ambitious as well as I am, and with the sponsor committing 4 years and applying for a World Tour license. And I think that speaks for itself that we want to get up there. And it also, it's quite impressive how, if you look at the history, how the team has improved, you know, year by year and becoming bigger and bigger. So yeah, I'm really excited. I'm also going to have a leader role in that team, which I'm also excited about. I think yeah, especially for the classics, and we'll be a really strong team also with Emilia and Brody, and yeah, we'll be a super strong team also now with the Olympics next year. It's going to be a really interesting year. And yeah,
you mentioned as well needing to improve or working on areas. You know, we see you at the sharp end of a lot of really tough races, and I guess the challenge for you, for like a lot of riders, is how do you convert that into wins? How do you do that beyond developing your sprint, or, you know, what areas do you work on to make that next step?
I think first of all, it's about going back and training harder and more. And that's something, you know, you do step by step. I hope that I can make, you know, a further step up the ladder next year. And I'm definitely, I promise you, I'll train really hard during this off season. Also, as a competitive person, you know, you want to get that big win and you want to be up there and really, really fighting for that, yeah, for that big win. Obviously, so the physical side is one thing. And as you race, you also learn how to attack on the right point, or yeah, become better at the descending, or I mean, and the time trialing. There's so many aspects.
I mean, it seems that, as you'd expect, the commitment to being at the top of women's cycling is getting bigger and bigger each year. We see Annemiek van Vleuten, we hear stories about the training that she does, the life that she lives, Marianne Vos as well, life revolves around cycling. Is that something you're prepared to do? Is that something you want to do? Or is it difficult, and is it desirable for you to have some kind of balance in your life as well?
I mean, I think for me, it's really important to have balance. But I mean, so on one side, you know, you're extremely focused on training hard and doing the best. And, you know, there's so many ways that, you know, you try that to get that little extra, if it's recovery, if it's sleeping, if it's the, you know, eating healthy food, or, you know, and then there's also the mental side and the being a happy person. Or I think that's something that's really important for me as a rider. I'm a really emotional person, and it's important that I can go out and have a drink and, you know, yeah, have that balance and have that fun. And it's, I don't think I'll be the best rider in the world if I would just go, you know, on one straight line and just be like, no candy, no alcohol, or, you know, like, sometimes it's important to do those things. I mean, not all the time, obviously, but to sometimes say, tonight, you know, let's have a bottle of wine, or, you know, like, and I think that's also what makes me a good rider, that I'm a happy rider.
So when are you gonna get together with your new teammates?
We're meeting for training camp in December, so excited for that.
Well, it is, I guess, you know, you've been in the same team for quite a long time now, and it will be a big change for you, I guess, won't it?
Yeah, it is going to. And I'm excited because, you know, you'll meet new staff and everything is just new, and new bikes and new teammates, and everything is new. But that's also, you know, the exciting and the fun part of it, you know, because it's going to be a new experience, and I think it's going to be a good one.
And what else are your plans over the winter? Is it just hard work and training, or do you get to go home to Denmark and enjoy yourself a bit?
Yeah, I will definitely. And also, you know, for Christmas and stuff, I'll be in Denmark. And for sure, I'll also drink a glass or two champagne, you know, when we hit New Year's evening. So yeah, there should be time for having fun as well.
And if you could win one race next year, which one would it be? I heard you on the stage talk about strategy. Bianchi, and I thought, yeah, I could see, you know, the finish and the climb up to the finish. It's an obvious contender, but what would be the race you would most like to win?
Oh, yeah, there are many races I would really like to win, but they, you know, like a race, Strade or Flanders, but you know, I mean, those are races that every cyclist wants to win, you know, so it's going to be crazy hard to win one of these races. And yeah, it's not like, oh, if I don't win one of those races, the season has been shit, you know. For me next year, I would really like to go after that big win.
So that was Cecily Uttrup-Ludwig on her move to FDJ, and also how she spoke on stage with you, Orla, about, you know, how she could improve and how she can, you know, narrow the gap to the, you know, the very top, because she's getting on the podium in tough races, or she's, you know, putting in performances that are very eye-catching, but she's not translating that into wins as yet. Still very young, she's 24. But I asked, you know, what can she do? What areas can she work on to try and go from being a podium finisher to a winner? And also, how prepared is she to make the sacrifices that some riders are clearly making? To, you know, Annemiek van Vleuten being the most obvious example of somebody so committed to her sport and raising the bar for everybody else. So it was interesting to hear some of her thoughts on that. But I don't know about you, Rose, did that move catch you by surprise as well?
It did a bit, actually, because obviously she's kind of part... You think of her when you think about Bigler, and it's interesting to see her progression. Kind of Cecily, she was kind of an unknown, and then she won the Women's World Tour youth jersey because she got some great results a few years ago. But she was always basically in a helper role for Ashley Moorman. Then Ashley Moorman left to go to CCC Live, and then I think Cecily kind of became the leader, but, you know, not in a way that she'd been building up to becoming a leader. So it's interesting to see this move where she is now the leader and she's going to FDJ, and she's going to have to live up to that kind of role, as it were, because in the past she's, you know, always been given the time and the freedom to, you know, try what she wants, to try and get a win or try and get a podium. But now there is definitely going to be eyes on her to do something at FDJ. And FDJ, you know, it's not known as a winning team. They've got some strong domestiques there, and I know that Brody Chapman is going to FDJ as well, and there's Gillo and Farlin, which are, you know, very strong domestiques for Cecily there. But without having that kind of winning nature already, I think it's going to be quite hard, actually, for Cecily. But I mean, she raises her game all the time, and, you know, in some races which you would, that I think, oh no, this race is too hard for her to do well in, she always surprises and impresses. So, it'll be an interesting challenge.
Any other moves catch your eye, Orla?
Just the Trek additions, really. The fact that they are bolstering their team from 12 full-time riders to 14, I think, speaks volumes of their longer-term ambitions, as does the two riders that they've signed. So Eleanor Backstead, her first pro contract, and Lucinda Brand, a seasoned pro, I think speaks to the fact that they are trying to train up a next generation as well as trying to win with their current riders. You know, when you look at Abby Van Twisk has re-signed, they've almost got this distinction between the guys like Lizzie Deignan at the very top, who we know can win races, and the younger ones coming through. And Lucinda Brand, I'm sure, will get opportunities of her own, but I'm quite sure as well that she's been signed partly to share that experience. You know, she's such a hardy rider and she's such a canny rider. You know, she knows how to read moves. She can be very aggressive. And that kind of experience, I think, will be invaluable to the likes of Eleanor Backstead and to the likes of Abby Van Twisk and the other younger riders in the team. So that really did strike me, because they had a solid first year. I think that, what were they, top five, fifth, I think, in the world rankings. I know they wanted to be higher. I spoke to Georgia Bronzini and Ina Tuttenberg before the Tour of Flanders this year, and that they wanted to be sort of top three by the end of the year. They wanted a few bigger wins under their belt, which they didn't really get. I mean, Lizzie won the women's tour. But they maybe haven't set the peloton and the calendar alight as they might have wanted to, but a decent, solid first season, I would say, and a big, big year coming up with the Olympics as much as anything else for their riders. So I just thought it spoke of encouraging longer term ambitions, really, especially since they are one of the teams who've applied for the top tier of the Women's World Tour for next year, you know, so they're planning to be in the sport at least for another 4 years anyway. So yeah, they were the moves really that struck me the most.
I think Lucinda Brand will be incredible, actually. That's a great coup for Trek Segafredo, but it also makes me question what Team Sunweb are up to, really, because I kind of feel like they're in a bit of a nowhere place. A few years ago, they were kind of getting 14, 18 wins a season. This season, I think they got three, and one of them was Leah Kirchman in a time trial. One of them was Leah Kirchman in a Canadian race, and one of them was a one stage at the Bowls Ladies Tour. And that's just kind of not what we'd kind of got used to in past years of, you know, seeing Corinne Rivera a lot at the top. But obviously, and losing Brand, losing Ellen van Dijk a few years ago, I think that kind of made a massive shift. So it kind of surprises me that they're again letting one of their absolutely key riders go and go to Trek Segafredo.
The Oppo. Huh? The Oppo. Again, the opposition.
The opposition.
All right. I couldn't understand what you're saying.
Channeling my inner Australian there.
Anna Henderson, a former skier. Maybe they've looked at the men's results and thought that you need to take the Alpine.
They haven't signed anybody. I mean, there's not a lot of changes at Sunweb, are there? So
yeah, they've got Alison Jackson.
Alison Jackson as well.
But it looks quite kind of sprinty now. I mean, and, you know, Leanne Lippert, we were all there at the women's tour, and she had a great prospect. But I kind of feel like she's a little bit left on her own somewhat, because they've got kind of a lot of these very fast finishers. And, you know, I don't necessarily know that there's people to kind of back up the kind of performances that Leanne Lippert can put out. And you know, they had Janneke Ensing, and then she left early this year because of, you know, some kind of disagreement, or, you know, not quite feeling comfortable at the team, so she left early. So it's kind of for a team that was I think blazing a trail a few years ago in terms of nominating a leader and working for a leader, which is something a few years ago in women's cycling wasn't really happening. It's kind of funny to see them kind of left behind a little bit.
It's funny, isn't it, because the first women's tour we did, they were so impressive in riding as a team and defending the jersey, Corinne Rivera's jersey. Since then they've sort of stagnated a little bit, I think. Any others catch your eye? I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Lorena Vibas, because one of the stories of the year has been Park Hotel Valkenburg and Demi Vollering as well there. And they look to have a really good long-term plan in place, not least because they'd signed Vibas up on this long-term contract, which is either to 2020 or 2021. But it seemed like they had really invested in these young Dutch riders to as part of a kind of long-term plan.
It could be a risky move for Lorena Vibas, because there's something that's clearly working for her at Park Hotel Valkenburg. And I spoke to the team a few times through the year, and they were taking a lot of pride in punching above their weight and bringing these youngsters through and taking it to the more seasoned pros. And that comes with an awful lot of momentum and an awful lot of fight. And I just wonder, you know, she's top dog on Park Hotel Valkenburg, her and Demi Vollering. If she moves to another team, she'll have to fight for those opportunities to win races, fight for opportunities to lead a team. It'll be a very different setup regardless of what happens. So I'm not saying that she shouldn't be doing it, and it'd be mad for her to not consider it, but I don't think it inevitably translates into more success if she does leave before her contract's up.
You would imagine it would translate into more money.
Well,
I mean, because
true.
I don't imagine she's on a lot of money at such a small team, whereas there are teams out there who want her, who probably would be able to offer her a considerable raise. And, you know, it's not... She'd be top dog on most teams when it comes to bunch sprints now, you'd have to say.
It's not like she was relying on, you know, you get those sprinters who rely on a really good lead out to basically take them to the line. It's not like she's been doing that this year. So it does make me think that on whatever team she joins, that she could she could win there. But it kind of, obviously we don't know the ins and outs of the situation, but it does seem like a bit of a shame for Park Hotel Valkenburg, who obviously, they are bolstering their squad. They're bringing in Romy Casper and Anushka Costa and Hannah Nilsson, who are all really good, strong, experienced domestiques. And it seems like that they would have been bolstering that squad to work to kind of bolster the, you know, Demi Vollering and Lorena Vibas, who are already there. But I mean, that's kind of the nature of these kind of development squads in football. You know, if you develop a player and sell them on, you get a load of money. In cycling, if you develop a rider and sell them on, you know, you don't get anything. So that's kind of the nature of those kind of squads, to lose their riders.
It's also risky for her angling for a move if the move then doesn't happen. And that could be, you know, uncomfortable next year perhaps. But we'll keep an eye on that. Well, listen, we'll leave it there, shall we? And convene again next month. Maybe all in person. Who knows, in December.
Oh, it'd be great.
Might be an opportunity for that. In the meantime, thank you very much, Orla. Good luck.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Rose.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.